I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. If the six New England states were in a road race for job growth, the Granite State, once a frontrunner, now finds itself in the middle of the pack. That's according to a recent forecast by the New England Economic Partnership. It predicts that New Hampshire will regain the 25,000 jobs it lost during the recession by next spring. But looking around at our regional competitors, Massachusetts and Vermont have already sprinted ahead and are back to their pre-recession employment levels. The study reflects earlier research, all indicating that the Granite State's once impressive ability to bounce back after a downturn isn't what it used to be. And questions of why that's the case and what changes New Hampshire might make to regain its leadership are much on the minds of policymakers, as well as the state's Business and Industry Association, which releases its strategic economic plan for New Hampshire today. It's also an issue NHPR is examining all week in a series called How We Work, 5 years later. Here in The Exchange, we'll dig into workforce trends pre- and post-recession. We'll ask how well we're educating the employees of the future and how older workers are faring. We'll also examine what employee satisfaction means in 2013. But to kick it all off this hour, we will look at the big picture, crunching the jobs numbers of the past half decade. Let's hear from you, too. How do you see our workforce and the work it does changing in the past 5 years? What's better, in your opinion? What's worse? And what would really make a difference in improving the employment picture here in the Granite State? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. We have two guests for the hour. Steve Norton is here, Executive Director at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Steve, great to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Brian Gottlob, head of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. He's based in Dover. And Brian, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, we're looking, as I said, guys, all this week at our workforce, how the way we work has changed over the past 5 years. So let's just start 5 years ago. And Steve Norton, if you could paint a picture for us, please, of New Hampshire employment just before the Great Recession.
Well, you have to remember that for 30 years, New Hampshire was one of the fastest growing economies in the Northeast. And we had really benefited from strong migratory tailwinds, if you will. And those had started to peter out, but we were still a fast-growing economy. We had an enviable job base, lots of advanced high-tech manufacturing, in part due to our location close to the Massachusetts economy, and really sort of protected to some extent from some of the global trends that had the rest of the country had been experiencing. And so around 2007, while everyone was beginning to experience some of the first tremors of the Great Recession, it wasn't being felt here quite as much. We were in an enviable position, though not as enviable as we'd been in the last 10 years. And then, of course, the Great Recession hit.
Yeah, 3.3% unemployment in New Hampshire in August
right.
of 2007. That seems amazing,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It is. Yeah, that's in essence structural unemployment. You can't get much lower than that.
Yeah, Brian, I'd love to see your picture, too, if you could paint it for us.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Steve's absolutely right. The migratory trends, influx of well-educated, skilled individuals into the state for a couple of decades really fueled tremendous economic growth, growth in a lot of high-level technology-based jobs. And that began to unwind in around the mid part of the last decade. I will say that one of the reasons why we seem to be faring a little bit better at the beginning of the recession and in the early parts of the recovery is that unlike a lot of states and the nation as a whole, we really weren't losing government employment at a rate that many states were. Subsequent to that, as we've recovered, as the nation has recovered, New Hampshire, ironically, has been shedding government jobs, particularly at the local level, at a much faster rate. And one of the things that that's done is that it's held back the overall recovery. It makes our job growth picture look not as strong. Actually, on the in the private sector, we're doing pretty good. We've recovered over 80%, almost 90% of the jobs that we lost. On the government side, however, we've continued to shed jobs, and it reduces the overall level of growth employment growth in the state.
Well, let me ask about something you said there, Brian, and hear from both of you on this. You said we've recovered at this point 80 to 90% of the jobs we lost during the Great Recession. What kind of jobs, though? I mean, we're not saying, you know, we had a Joe had a great manufacturing job before the recession began, and he has a great manufacturing job now. Susan was a teacher before the recession began.
Right.
She got laid off, but now she's got a great teaching job now. So the impression, Brian, and you know where I'm going with this, the impression is before the recession, New Hampshire had a lot of so-called good-paying jobs with good, solid benefits. And now they're sort of not as good as they used to be.
Yeah, a couple things. One, we haven't recovered 90% of the jobs yet. About almost 90% of the private sector jobs. We're a little further away when you add in the government jobs. But the point that I think you're trying to make is that the recovery is a little different than the job growth that's characterized the past couple of decades. And I look at it, and what I see is really almost a two-tiered labor market now. We are adding some very high-level jobs, business and professional services, which incorporates a whole host of very skilled jobs, occupations, lawyers, accountants, computer people, advertising, engineering, scientific. But at the other end, really over the last year or so, the fastest growing category industry has been in accommodations, lodging, and food services, restaurants. So what we've got is a lot of high-level jobs and a lot of low-level jobs. And what we're not seeing is those jobs that we traditionally thought in the middle. Manufacturing has been relatively slow growth. Construction is picking up, but during the Great Recession, we lost tremendous numbers of those. So we're kind of creating a system where either you're very high-skilled and you're getting a job, or you're low-skilled and you're getting a job, and not much in between.
Yeah, well, I love your thoughts too, Steve, on that narrative that, okay, we may be replacing jobs, but they're not as good as they used to be. Is that accurate or not?
Well, let's just to give it a sense of magnitude, goods-producing jobs declined about 3.5% between 2007 and 2012. Manufacturing declined about 3% per year.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And so, and those are generally jobs where you're creating things, you're exporting products, you're bringing wealth into the state, and those are generally high-paying jobs. During that same time period, we saw a slight decline, 2% in financial services. The only place we were seeing increases were in healthcare and education. So, and during the recession, you were absolutely seeing a change in the very structure and distribution of jobs to lower-paying jobs. Now, what has happened, I think, as a result, and I think Brian would agree, is we've become more productive. So in other words, we're creating more with fewer jobs. So our gross domestic product, our gross state product, our personal income may be growing, but we've done it at the expense of a significant portion of the jobs. And I think going forward, there's a real question about that group of individuals that have lost employment and how they become reemployed or develop the skills necessary to become employed in a new economy, or if we grow fast enough to rehire those individuals.
Yeah, and productivity, you know, sounds great, but sometimes that means there's 8 people doing a job that really needs 10 people, and those 8 people are really stressed out.
Well, that's one way of thinking about it. The other is that we could have a growing economy without necessarily bringing people into the state, which may be a good thing if we can't bring people into the state, if we don't see that migration that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, let me invite our listeners to join us, and then a lot more questions for both of you. The number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're kicking off a week-long series called How We Work 5 Years Later. This hour, we're crunching the numbers on jobs, then and now, looking at where we were, how the state has recovered so far, and a little bit later, we'll look at how New Hampshire might want to position itself to respond to future workforce and economic needs. The number for you to join us right now is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. How do you see the workforce and the work we do changing over the past 5 years since the recession? What do you see as better? What do you think is worse? What do you think would really make a difference in improving the employment picture here in New Hampshire? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you like, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. And one more sort of picky economic definition question, if I could, Brian Gottlob, to you. So when we talk about adding jobs, losing jobs, how do you measure what a job is? I mean, again, if someone's was working full-time and now they're working part-time, still have a job, right. but it yeah. may not be the job they
yeah,
want.
Yeah, and that's not really factored into the job data, unfortunately. To get at that information, you really have to look a lot more deeply. If an individual is cut from 35 hours a week or 37 hours a week, and that's considered a full-time job, down to 29 hours, they're still on the employment rolls and still counted as an employee, but their circumstances have clearly changed. And those kinds of repercussions show up in other areas of the data, not the employment statistics, but on the income statistics when you start to see growth in income in the state, which has not been particularly good. You know, I think there's two aspects of what's happening, one of which is the quality of the jobs, certainly, which is mixed. I did an analysis recently where I looked at the average wage of the jobs that were being advertised online in New Hampshire, compared it this year with 2 years ago and 4 years ago, and it was lower in the most recent quarter than it was 2 years ago. Which
lower
is,
in terms of salary being
yeah,
offered? Wow.
When I adjust it for inflation, it looks even worse. So it's an indication to me that, you know, and I've seen it in the help wanted advertising, we're starting to see more of an issue of the job quality as we have gotten further out into the recession. Just to give you an example, from the depths of the recession to now, the jobs that have added, we've regained a lot of jobs. About a quarter of them were in high-level business professional services, and about a quarter, just under, were in accommodation and food services jobs. In the last year, just the last 12-month period, a third of the jobs have been in accommodation that we've added have been in accommodation and food services, and only about 9% have been in a business and professional jobs. So there is an issue there in terms of growth. And I think moving forward, it's a real point of discussion. We really have to look at that issue. It's not just the jobs, and it's the number of hours, and it's the quality.
Right. All right. Well, we will talk more after a short break. I want to dig into some of the regional data that you guys have been looking at, because you can't really say there's one picture of New Hampshire employment or New Hampshire's economy. It does sort of break out regionally. I know you guys have been looking at that. So we'll talk about that after a short break and start taking your calls as well. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR and the Live Free or Die Alliance presents a town hall healthcare forum. Laura Kanoy will lead a panel of experts through a discussion of what the Affordable Care Act means for New Hampshire. And you can submit your questions online at nhpr.org, and you can listen to the forum live on nhpr.org tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. More of our week-long series, How We Work, 5 years later on The Exchange, and at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, what changes to the Affordable Care Act will mean for consumers and insurance companies. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Goff Wilson, an immigration law firm, offering businesses and individuals a global solution to moving people around the world, online at goffwilson.com. From InCap Group Captive Employee Insurance Solutions from Clark and Levy. Details about upcoming InCap presentations available at bestbenefits123.com. And the Spine Center at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, using research results to build customized treatment plans. Information at dhspine.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're kicking off our week-long series, How We Work, 5 years later, with a focus on jobs in New Hampshire. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Looking back over the past half decade as we crunch the numbers, we'd love your stories of work and the workforce. What changes have you seen over the past 5 years? What do you think is better about the workforce today? What's worse? What would make a difference in improving the employment picture here in New Hampshire? Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. 77 email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. Also, we've got some infographics of job numbers through the recession on our webpage, nhpr.org. Some pretty cool numbers there, and we'll give you a sense of how things have changed over the past 5 years. nhpr.org to check those out. Steve Norton and Brian Gottlob, before we go to our listeners, just a little bit more if we could. Steve, you have said it's important when discussing the New Hampshire economy, the New Hampshire workforce and jobs, you can't really say New Hampshire. You have to kind of divide it up into regions, don't you?
Right, absolutely. Some of them are quite obvious, and that is the North Country, for example, which is a natural-based resource economy and tourist economy. But there are also huge variations in the inputs to businesses that occur across the state. You know, for example, in the Great North Woods, which is everything above the notch, if you will, only about 15% of the adult population have a BA or higher. A very different workforce than, say, the Seacoast or Greater Nashville, with almost 40% of the adult population with a BA or higher. So when you're talking about the economy, what's being done there, and also the resources or assets of each of the areas, it's very different across the state. When you look, you know, over the last 30 years, Nashua-Manchester corridor is actually one of the fastest growing places when you look at high-tech firms. And no one ever thinks of that when they think about economic development. But one question we may want to ask ourselves is, what is the best regional approach to economic development? Do we want to or can we afford to use the scarce resources across the entire state? These are tough, difficult questions, but how do we build on the assets that we have, and do we build on them at the regional level to create, you know, strong ecologies of economic development?
Ecologies of economic development. I like that. Give me a little bit more there.
There's a new growing field. There's a gentleman named Brad Feld who's done some work looking at what it takes to, in essence, create something like the energy in a Silicon Valley or these places across the country where you've seen real positive deviance from declining economic activity. And they're talking about, you know, creation of high-tech industries with one or two companies that are really anchors for the community. The community itself is trying to create an environment that's amenable to young people and their interests, so really a draw for the type of individuals that are programmers, that are high-tech individuals, human capital, if you will. And I think, you know, one of the great stories in New Hampshire, DYN, they're trying to create that ecology in the Manchester area following that same model.
All right. And Brian, we were talking about this before, too, the Seacoast and where you live and where there's a lot happening.
But, you know, I characterize this regional difference. There are a lot of regional differences, but you can break it down to one thing, and that's the level of educational attainment in a community or a region. You know, I use this phrase too often. It's almost hackneyed now, but brains are the most valuable resource of the 21st century. And smart, well-educated people are very mobile, and where they locate, strong economic growth will follow. If you correlate the percentage of skilled, well-educated people around the state with job growth, you'll see a very strong correlation. And I've done that at the community level. If you look at even during the recession, who lost the most jobs and who lost the fewest jobs, it's all related to the level of educational attainment. And that has something to do with the nature of industries that are growing, are requiring more skilled, well-educated people. The Seacoast has done well because it is a locus of skilled, well-educated people, high levels of educational attainment, college graduations, 2 and 4 year college graduates, similar to the Upper Valley region, the Hanover-Lebanon region, very high percentages of skilled, well-educated individuals also performed quite well. So there's a strong relationship there. So we can make it very complex about the characteristics of different regions, but when you really boil it down, it has to do with the skill level and the educational attainment level of the workforce in those regions.
Well, it's interesting because I can't tell you how many headlines I've seen, is college worth it anymore? People are really questioning the value of college and higher education in general.
But they're not questioning the value of the ability to think carefully, clearly, and the human capital associated with it. They're more questioning the institution's ability to pay off the return on investment that you're dumping into education.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more later in this series about education, how we're preparing the workforce of the future. But do you want to jump in on that too,
Paul? No, I mean, just all you have to do is look at the unemployment data for those who have a college degree and those who don't have any earnings to know that it does pay off. That does it mean that it pays off no matter how much you spend? No, not necessarily. Or what degree you get? No, those are issues. But in general, in the aggregate, it clearly makes sense for individuals to obtain a college degree.
Again, our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. As we look back over the past 5 years and as we start to look ahead, tell us your story. Are you doing better or worse than before the recession in terms of your own employment? Are you working part-time, for example, and want to be working full-time? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's all one word, NHPR Exchange. Joining us now is Jim Roach. He is president of the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. And just today, the BIA is going to release its strategic economic plan for New Hampshire. And Jim Roach, welcome back. Good to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, how significant is this, Jim, that the BIA is releasing this big strategic plan for the state? I mean, have you done this before? Have others done this before?
It's been done in the past, but for us, it's a big deal. Our members for 7 years running were asking us to put together a strategic economic plan for New Hampshire, and up until a year ago, my board of directors declined for various reasons, but they felt the timing was right a year ago to take the project on, so we did.
Yeah, and the report mentions in its introduction, and I don't want to give away too much because you haven't released it yet, right? That's later this morning.
Right.
But it does mention a growing unease among business leaders in the state for the past couple years. What's that unease feel like, Jim? What's that all about?
Well, actually, it's been going on longer than that. That was even pre-recession, but I think it intensified after the recession. The feeling, I think, overall is that the sort of the ship of state is just drifting on the ocean with the tides or the winds or whatnot. Nobody was looking ahead to scope out where our challenges lie, notwithstanding the work that the Center for Public Policy Studies did recently in their tailwinds to headwinds study. But beyond that, nobody was really looking ahead at how to address these issues, where the opportunities lie, where the weaknesses were. And so I think that was driving the unease that our members and business leaders throughout the state expressed. And so, with Governor Lynch announcing his retirement after 4 terms in office and no other group stepping up to take this project on, the board felt the timing was right to try and address this sense of unease.
And how does that unease, Jim, if you could, translate down to the individual business person? You know, I'd like to hire, but I'm not sure, or I want to expand, but I'm not sure. What does that unease feel like on a very personal business-to-business basis?
Well, I would say before the recession, advanced manufacturers and technology companies were getting contracts that were longer term, 2 or 3 years, and for larger volumes. Post-recession, I think the contracts are shorter term and smaller volume. So that makes planning a little bit more difficult, and it certainly makes them reluctant to add employment, to take on new employees, because of the change in contracting length and volume, and I think so that has I think led to slower recovery than might otherwise be the case.
Sure, not investing with both feet, maybe just one foot.
Right, exactly.
Well, and I want to ask a couple more questions about the strategic plan. But as we look back 5 years, and as you were just mentioning a minute ago, Jim, what do you remember hearing from New Hampshire business around that time 5 years ago when things started to seem to get dire nationally? What was the big worry here in New Hampshire?
Well, the worry for most businesses is that they were concerned about falling off the cliff.
Wow.
I would say on average, business went down 20 to 40%. You know, if you're lucky, it only went down 20%. If you were unfortunate, your book of business went down 40%. So it was a very challenging time, and it's taken a long time to get back to pre-recession levels.
Wow, 20 to 40% people saw their business drop off, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, and there's been a lot made of lost construction and especially manufacturing jobs, Jim, as you well know. And the idea that some people are having is that the New Hampshire economy, the New Hampshire employment picture, you know, the jobs just aren't as good as they used to be. I use that word loosely, but you know what I'm saying, pay, benefits. Is that a fair assessment, that the jobs we've recovered aren't as good as the ones we lost?
I'm not sure that it is fair. I think there are hundreds of jobs that are not being filled in the advanced manufacturing space, and the problem is a lack of skill sets. Employers bemoan the fact that they can't find STEM-educated, science, technology, engineering, math, educated younger people coming in to replace folks that might be retiring. And there's also often a different expectation on the part of younger people for what they expect when they get to the job site. They're not necessarily workplace ready. Obviously, there are outstanding exceptions, but generally speaking, those are two recurring themes: a lack of STEM-educated younger people coming into the workforce to fill these really outstanding jobs in manufacturing. These are, you know, not only livable wage, but you can feed a family for most of these positions. And so lack of you know, kids that can come in and fill these positions, and then in some cases sort of unrealistic expectations. You know, I want to be president in 5 years, that sort of thing.
I was going to ask you about that. Not workplace ready. Give us a little bit more there, Jim. You gave us some, but I'd love a little more detail.
Well, I think among the younger generation, there's concern, again, not always factual, but concern that their expectations are not what their parents were, for example. I mean, you know, my parents, when they got a job, they held on to it, and they didn't expect rapid advancement. They expected to hold on to the job and work their way up. But the expectation for more immediate advancement, I think, is in place today, and that was not the case a generation ago.
And just looking now where we are 5 years after the recession started, Jim, so broadly among your members, what kinds of businesses are feeling good these days? They've recovered fully, they're doing well.
Well, certainly the gun makers in New Hampshire are doing exceptionally well. Sturm Ruger and Sig Sauer, I think Linton Sprungly is having a good year. And I think overall advanced manufacturing and technology companies are doing, you know, well, probably pre-recession levels or approaching that. I think the construction industry continues to struggle. Real estate appears to be doing well, although the signals are somewhat mixed. We'll see about the retail community with Christmas and you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, the shopping season coming up, and I think the tourism industry, which is a big industry in New Hampshire, is it sort of ebbs and flows with the economy as well.
Sure, and to some extent, businesses are, you know, subject to the ebbs and flows. But among those businesses, Jim, that have recovered well, what's their secret? What is it that they do that has helped them move ahead in this rather difficult economy?
Well, I think they look for efficiencies and embracing lean manufacturing and other principles that make them able to put out product. And in the service sector, the same thing, put out products and services that are cost-effective and that are there's a market for them. And if they have not invested in either technology or those kinds of processes, meeting the needs of their customers at a very high level, then they certainly are going to be struggling.
And getting back to your strategic plan, which, again, I don't want to say too much about it because it's being released later this morning, but it's got some strategic goals in there. Do you want to give us a little preview, Jim, on what some of those goals are for the state's economy?
Well, there are nine different goals representing nine different kind of issue areas that are important to the economy and certainly important to the business community. What I can share with you, Laura, right now is the vision statement for the
Sure.
overall plan, which says the vision for New Hampshire is to ensure New Hampshire provides meaningful advantages for businesses through a vibrant, sustainable economy and the nation's best environment in which our residents can prosper. And so built around that vision statement are nine specific goals in nine different issue areas and then over 100 recommendations to help us get to the goals obviously supporting the vision statement.
So who takes on the charge next on these particular goals? Who kind of gets together and says, all right, this is our goal and we're going to work on it, whether it's education or energy or whatever?
Yeah, we hope that others out there, businesses, individuals, nonprofits, trade associations will embrace certainly parts, if not all, of the strategic economic plan. You know, we're a small organization, so we'll take on the things that we think are important to us in the early going. But there's no way an organization like ours, you know, with nine people on staff, are going to be able to give each recommendation equal attention. So so the plan is intended for the benefit of New Hampshire. So we hope that, as I said, other individuals, groups, businesses will, and elected officials, policy leaders, will embrace pieces of it or sections of it and help us move the ball forward.
All right, Jim, good to talk to you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Jim Roach, president of the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. And again, a little bit later today, the BIA is going to release its strategic economic plan for New Hampshire. You can join us now as we look at the employment picture here in New Hampshire. It's part of our series, How We Work, 5 years later. We'd love your stories, your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. And gentlemen, I have some emails that came in, but I did want to pick up on one thing that Jim said that I thought was real interesting. Steve Norton, to you, he said, you know, hey, there are hundreds of great jobs at the ready, but not the workers to fill them. This is the famous skills gap that we keep getting to and some of the educational issues that Brian raised earlier.
It is. And I think Brian has some great information. I'm going to defer to him in just a minute, but I'll just give you a very high-level sort of description of how we educate people in the state. We have a very high high school graduation rate. We're fourth in the country.
That's pretty good.
That's great. We have the fifth highest share of the population in the science and engineering workforce, the STEM workforce.
Wow.
So we've got a lot of jobs there. We graduate a lot of kids. We rank 24th in the country in the rate of high school grads going to a degree-granting institution. What that means is that we have a high graduation rate. We don't send them to degree-granting universities. So we must be importing individuals historically.
And that's been the case for a while, Steve.
And exactly right. And so I think that the question is, we have historically been able to import these individuals. And in a world in which we can't import those individuals, how do we educate them? Do we grow our own or do we find other ways of importing them?
Yeah, right. And that's been an issue for some time, but definitely more so now. That gets into immigration too, doesn't
right.
it, Steve? H-1B visas,
right.
bringing in skilled workers from right. elsewhere if you can't find them at home.
And one final interesting, we rank 48th in the country in growth in 35 to 44-year-olds, 48th in the country. That means there are 47 states who are growing the population that are going to take these jobs ahead of the state of New Hampshire.
Pretty profound, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Demographics is destiny?
Yeah, well, historically, you know, our immigration or in-migration from other states has been in 30 to 44-year-olds, two wage earner married couple families, probably both college educated with children. That's kind of our core in-migrant. Couple things. One, there are many fewer 35 to 44-year-olds anywhere in the country, so we're drawing from a smaller population. And particularly in the Northeast, there's an even smaller cohort of that because they've moved a long time ago. So we don't have as many to draw on. Other aspect is that in the recent recession, the housing market crash, if you think about that demographic, 30 to 44-year-olds who moved to the state, what characterizes them? They probably owned a home somewhere else, which they would have to sell, probably at a loss. Then they'd have to come here and buy a house. And it has made it very difficult to do that over the last several years. So if when you combine all of those factors, that is one of the reasons why we have such a low percentage of that particular cohort. And, you know, I am a big believer in the skills gap, although, you know, historically, as you mentioned, Laura, we have filled that gap through in-migration. That's how we've done it. So, you know, whatever we come up with in terms of policies, I would argue, I mean, I'm very interested, I'm a business person, what we need to do to make business happy, but we've got to figure out what it is to do to make people happy to want to come here.
Well, in fact, day four of our series is going to be, what does employee satisfaction mean in 2013? So we'll be looking at that. I've got some emails that I want to share with you after a short break. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, what changes to the Affordable Care Act will mean for consumers and insurance companies. Then, historian and writer Jill Lepore on the life of Ben Franklin's beloved sister, Jane. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Comcast Business, supporting New Hampshire Food Bank's collection of non-perishable food items at the New Hampshire for the Holidays Expo, December 7th and 8th. More at eventsnh.com. And jobsinnh.com, connecting New Hampshire employers with local qualified job seekers. Jobsinnh.com, how New Hampshire gets to work, online at jobsinnh.com. Cloudy rain showers this morning. Some could contain some heavy downpours and gusty winds. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our series continues with a focus on older workers. We invite you to join us live tomorrow at email us at exchange@nhpr.org before the show, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Today in The Exchange, again, we're kicking off our week-long series, How We Work 5 Years Later. We'd love your stories, questions, and thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, a couple people have shared their stories by email. Steve Norton, I'll give this one to you. Karen in Laconia says, I've been looking for full-time work and working part-time jobs for 3 years. During this time, I've seen an increase in part-time work, even for jobs requiring a college degree. While searching on the internet at the local New Hampshire Employment Security Office several weeks ago, I overheard an employment counselor mention to another that the over 60 workers are having a harder time finding work. As an older worker myself, this was discouraging to hear. And Karen, again, tomorrow in The Exchange, we're going to be looking more at older workers, how they fared in the recession, how they're faring today. But let's pick up on her first point, Steve, and that is, you know, more and more, it's part-time. It's not full-time with benefits and wages and so forth.
Yeah, I think that's part of the overall story, that you've seen an increase in the gross domestic product and the increase in corporate profits across the recession. Really, what seems to have happened is companies have become more efficient. They've lowered employment, and they've done it either by shedding jobs or shedding hours. And I think the question is going forward, and Jim from the BIA mentioned it, will we see enough economic growth to create an environment in which they hire or the workforce expands, either by creating new individual jobs or expanding the hours within those jobs?
So here's the big question for you, Stephen. I know you have to leave a little bit early today. And you talk to business people, so I'm curious as to what you think. We keep hearing about this increase in part-time work. So in the short term, companies are saving money on wages and benefits. In the long run, though, if those folks have less money, they're not going to go out to eat. They're not going to buy the new car. They're not going to buy as many Christmas, you know, presents for their kids this year. So there's the short term and the long term. How much are people starting to look at that long term? I'm saving money right now, but in the bigger picture, I may not be saving money.
Well, 2/3 of our economy is from consumption. And so you want that to grow. And that's why people watch consumer confidence. And so until the economy and people's confidence in the future economy expand, we're not going to see the type of growth that we saw in the 90s or the 80s. You know, and there's some that argue those days are done. My crystal ball is certainly too broken to be able to say anything about that. But certainly we will not see growth until you see that consumer confidence expand.
Yeah. And final thoughts, Steve, again, because I know you have to go. Final thoughts on this topic that we've been looking at this hour, kind of where we were with the jobs 5 years ago, where we are now, and what the future might look like. Again, we heard from Jim Roach, you know, looking strategically ahead.
Yeah, I think the state needs a new model for thinking about economic development. And we have, as a state, relatively scarce resources, as most states do, to focus on this. And I think we do need to focus. We've been able to rest on, you know, strong migratory growth, an enviable economic position, and close proximity to the Boston market. That is probably not enough any longer to continue that extraordinary growth that we experienced. And so I think the BIA, regional planning commissions, the governor's office, the legislature, they're all going to want to take a look and say, how do we focus our energy to ensure that we're prepared for the assets that we can build on and the economy that's coming forward?
Yeah, no more resting on those demographic laurels.
That's
so what's
correct.
The next plan?
That's correct.
All right. Good to see you as always,
Steve.
Thank you. Again, that's Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. You can join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. How do you see New Hampshire's workforce and the work we do changing over the past 5 years? What do you think is better about working today? What is worse? What would help make a difference in improving employment here in the Granite State? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Brian Gottlob, here's a great email from Scott in Dover. And Scott, it's a little long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but thank you very much. He says he's been living in New Hampshire for about 9 years, and I have seen a lot of the changes through the recession. I've experienced layoffs. I'm in high tech, and I want to cut to the chase. There aren't as many companies in New Hampshire. The ones that are here expect a lot more from their workers, hours, workload, etc., and don't offer as much in salary and benefits as surrounding states. In my case, Scott says, that meant having to commute to Boston to get better opportunities. But many New Hampshire companies tend to, quote, blame it on the employee, e.g. they need more training, education, skills. But if that were true, he says, how is it that Massachusetts companies can make it work? He says if budget, growth, or other factors are the problem, that's one thing. But Scott says employees need to look out for themselves and their families and go where the opportunities are. This is a complaint I have heard, Brian, that, you know, a lot of skilled workers in New Hampshire go to Massachusetts because the pay is better.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, some of that, it's not at all pernicious. You know, there's a thing in economics called the compensating benefits and compensating wages. It costs more to live in Massachusetts. It costs more to live in the greater Boston area.
And they pay income taxes down there.
Exactly. So, you know, to compensate individuals for all of that, the wages tend to be higher. Of course, we know that a lot of people they don't game the system, but they benefit from that by living in New Hampshire where it is cheaper to live and working in the greater Boston area. Look, I'm happy that Boston area and the greater metro area is growing. We are in a regional labor market. I mean, it would be great if people didn't have to spend their time in their cars commuting, but the fact is if they have access to solid jobs, that's beneficial. Now, getting to his point about New Hampshire companies, I really wonder if we, and I don't have this data, but I would love to know whether the companies that are really growing, the Dynes of the world, of New Hampshire.
Manchester high-tech company. A lot of attention there. Hypotherm is another one.
Now, what are their policies? I would argue that, you know, they're able to attract workers. Are they treating their workers in a way that's building the loyalty that that Dave or Scott seems to be saying is missing? And I would argue that in a world where skilled individuals are relatively scarce, that those policies are long-term more associated with industries and individual companies that are thriving. I would love to see whether or not that's the case.
And then, you know, a lot of employers listening may think, well, that's great when times are fat, but when times are lean, you know, tough luck, right?
It's a matter of taking the long-term view versus the short-term view. You know, I believe in an era where labor force is not growing very strongly, where it's even growing less strongly among skilled, well-educated individuals, the ability to build a brand or a reputation for an individual company as being a place you want to work because there's some loyalty there means something. And companies that don't do that, I think, are being really short-sighted. And it may increase profits in the short term, but in the long term, it doesn't do much, I don't think, for your business model.
Interesting. And a great preview for our show Thursday, where we're going to look more at employee satisfaction. Let's take a call, if we could, Brian. And Peter's in Somersworth. Hi, Peter. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I actually think that you partially answered my question already with the customer loyalty that you were just speaking about. I work for a restaurant in the Somersworth area. And over the last year, especially since the recession, I've noticed that there's been a lot of employee turnover. That's partially due to people moving up in the company, but as with a restaurant, there's always a lot of turnover. But what we find is that there's a significant amount of employees that are only looking that are looking for full-time work, but can't maintain that because of the recession. And I think that if we were able to offer them better benefits, more hours, you know, that closer to the 40-hour mark rather than the 25 or 30, that you would find more people you know, with a higher skill set and that are more motivated to kind of move up in that corporate chain.
Yeah, so that's what your friends and so forth are looking for, Peter. They want the full-time jobs.
Absolutely. I think, and there's also that gap, especially with the Obamacare coming into effect, where the people who are, you know, we don't have college degrees, but we have a certain skill set, but we can't afford to both work part-time and afford health benefits. So if there was some type of, you know, incentive with company loyalty where, you know, we're guaranteed that 35 to 40 hours, and they offer some kind of competitive health package where you would find employees that aren't calling out, that aren't, you know, seeking other jobs or second employment or tired from working three jobs.
Yeah. Peter, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling in. What do you think, Brian?
No, I think he's touched on a number of points. You know, the phenomenon of reducing hours, it's always been an issue in his industry, in the food service industry, always employed a high percentage of part-time workers. You know, you have to wonder, and I've tried to get at the data on this, but it's a little bit early, what the impact of the Affordable Care Act is having on that. Is there a greater incentive to reduce the relatively more limited number of part-time, full-time employees to part-time status. That's an industry also that tends not to offer health care to as many of its workers as
because below a certain hour level, you don't have to offer health care under the law. So the fear is that this is going to make employers cut back.
Yeah. And we wonder about that because – and I've tried to get the data, but it's just a little bit early to take a look. The evidence is really mixed. Anecdotally, you're hearing that, you know, industries, specific businesses are reducing the full-time employees. But on the other hand, you see a few companies who have made a splash by doing just the opposite. And I think that's probably characteristic of getting back to the issue of building loyalty in an industry among a particular business. How important is it to some businesses? His particular industry, his particular business may not feel the need to develop that loyalty among its workforce because it feels as though they can replace those individuals. But for some businesses, it is much more important. The cost of bringing in new people.
Sure, training them, and
exactly.
then they make a mistake, and customers get mad. And
right. So I think the evidence is going to be mixed. Industries are dealing with this very differently in terms of cutting back full-time, part-time. I think in general we have seen, as the recession took hold, a reduction in full-time employment. But going forward, it's not clear how that will play out.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you again for your call. Let's take Ben in Manchester. Hi, Ben. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
My question I've lived in Manchester now for the last 18 years and I attended graduate school at Southern New Hampshire University. And one thing I've observed over the years with my friends and the immigrant population from Africa especially is that there's so much attention being given to refugees being settled around the state and all that. But some of us who came out here to do study, I mean, to go to college and all that, there are not very many opportunities for us to do management jobs and stuff like that. So I've never managed to penetrate the. I've worked for three companies now, and never been given an opportunity to do management opportunities. And my friends are the same too. And most of them have left the state.
Wow.
I think there is a kind of I don't know what I can call it, but indifference. I don't know what the right term will be, but it's like a lot of companies don't take up. This could be another subject for another show. But
sure. And Ben, I'm going to jump in just because we're running out of time. But last year we did a huge series on immigration in New Hampshire, and we talked about some of these issues. But I'm glad you called. So here he is, Brian. He's got his degree from Southern New Hampshire University, a great school. Having a hard time getting ahead.
Yeah, it's like
his friends are leaving. They're saying, forget it.
It's a glass ceiling for immigrants, which is kind of a new form of glass ceiling. But, it brings up a lot of interesting issues because as New Hampshire has stopped the in-migration from other states, the net in-migration from other states, what we have maintained is net international immigration. So, you know, over the last several years, we've been adding anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 international immigrants. Now,
which is a lot for a small state like New Hampshire.
It is a lot, and it's basically accounting for all of the movement into the state. So, I don't know what the basis of the glass ceiling is for immigrants, but you have to think, and I don't want to say anything pernicious, but New Hampshire is a very white, a very Anglo-Saxon state, and so it's an adjustment, I think, to see as many individuals from other parts of the world, and it is increasing, and likely it will continue to increase. So it's something that we'll have to adapt to, much the same way the workforce had to adapt to increasing numbers of women.
Yeah, and immigration in, the early 1920s and teens, people coming in to work at the mills in Manchester. There's a long, long,
exactly,
rich history
and,
there.
And you know, I think, unfortunately, international immigration is oftentimes associated with low-skilled individuals. And in this gentleman's case, he's a college-trained, skilled individual, and that's not typically what people who have concerns about immigration and fight the immigration wars or immigration battles think of. But I've done this analysis, and I can tell you that a very high percentage of people in certain occupations in this state, computer scientists, computer engineers, are foreign-born, a very high percentage. So a good portion of our very skilled workforce is foreign-born.
Well, and it's interesting, advocates of immigration who we talked to when we did this big series last year often pointed out that a lot of the top U.S. companies, right, talking U.S. now, not just New Hampshire, were founded by immigrants.
Sure, but for whatever reason, we do. But I would point out there's some examples of some companies in New Hampshire. GT Solar, Kendar Gupta is a foreign-born individual. So there are certainly examples of high-level and certainly at the management level, there are some. It's unfortunate that there may be a perception among some of his friends that that's not the case, and it may in fact be the case that they don't get hired at the upper levels.
Well, Ben, good to hear from you, and good luck. And Brian, just to wrap up with you, you know, as we talked about earlier, New Hampshire is expected to recover all the jobs that it lost in the recession by spring of next year. We talked about, though, how it's not, you know, tit for tat. I mean, the jobs we lost aren't the jobs that are being replaced. Right. What policies might the state look at, Brian, to help people adjust to this new employment world?
Well, I think we certainly need to focus, and because I said this earlier, I said brains are the most important resource, most valuable resource of the 21st century. So I'm a big believer in human capital policies. I think that's really the source of individual success, but it's also the source of regional success. The more skill, the more training we have, the more of those individuals, the stronger our economy will be. So we need to produce more of them, but we also in this state need to look at whether or not, and every community needs to understand this, whether or not they are attractive to those types of individuals. And that means looking at the amenities that your community offers.
Transportation, nightlife.
Nightlife, quality of social, cultural, natural amenities, the quality of the schools. Those things are very important to individuals with high-level abilities, well-educated, skilled individuals. So we should, as much as we want to satisfy businesses, we better make sure we also satisfy those individuals.
All right. Brian, it's been really good to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Welcome, Laura.
Brian Gottlob, head of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we continue our series, How We Work, 5 years later, with a look at older workers. Some found themselves suddenly out of a job due to recession and having to retool themselves at midlife for new careers. We examine who in this demographic was affected and half a decade later how they've adjusted, the many paths they've taken by choice or necessity. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from Republic, New Hampshire's original certified local farm-to-table restaurant. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, Elm Street, Manchester, online at republiccafe.com. And from Hospice at HCS, providing comfort, care, and support for people with advanced illness in southwestern New Hampshire. From offices in Keene, Peterborough, and Charlestown, hcsservices.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Last month, insurance companies sent cancellation letters to hundreds of thousands of individuals and small businesses. Policies held by these customers did not offer all the essential benefits required by the new healthcare law.